I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Not Girl, and today I'm joined by Michelin chef Rafael Chagli. Born in Sao Paulo in Brazil, Rafael has traveled Europe refining his craft at Michelin-starred restaurants in Italy, Spain, and the UK before joining forces with Paolo Erado to create the amazing Da Terra restaurant in London. Hi, Af, how are you?
Hello, Shalina, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you holding up during the second lockdown?
Good. Well, I guess as good as it can be, but here we are again, you know, another challenge to face. But I think is this time around, it was a little bit more aware that it's coming, other than the first one that was just out of the blue happened. And we had so many bookings, and this time now we kind of were a little bit prepared, let's say. But yeah, here we are again. So hopefully this time it won't be for too long.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can come back by next month sometime, let's say this.
Yeah, we've all got our fingers crossed there's not going to be any extensions of the lockdown. And so I know you haven't gone down the delivery route like many others have, but is that something that you gave some thought to?
I think the going down that route, there was a different strategy to be put in place. The first lockdown, when it happened, I wasn't expecting to last this time. It was 4 months, and we wasn't expecting this much. But then, at the beginning, I was kind of, you know, I thought it was gonna be a quick one. But then, you know, throughout the lockdown, you think, this actually is going to take it longer. But then you think, what are you going to do? I think I was more, I think having the help from the government keeps you positive, and you have a little faith that you can keep things rolling. Going down towards the delivery, I would have to, strategy the food and the restaurant differently, which is a lot effort, is a lot of work. And it wasn't something that I was particularly keen on to do, to be honest. So I kind of left it on the side. There are sometimes, moments that you think, maybe do something. But then again, you know, the food that you do in the restaurant, it doesn't suit a delivery. You know, you wouldn't want it to, take it home and eat.
Yeah, it often doesn't travel well.
No, it doesn't. So you would have to think, different menu, different food. But so I kind of like put it there on site. So.
Right. And as you know, I was at your restaurant just before the second lockdown. I mean, the detail, the intricacies of the food is just exquisite. Tell us about the influences that help shape your menu.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that you enjoy, first of all. So the menu is based around, experiences that I've had in the past working for many, many great chefs. And that's where you kind of model the layout of the menu and involving the dishes as well, and just make it better or as good as it can be, let's say. But I'm glad that you enjoy.
Yeah, well, talk to us about the influences about where you're from, and from Brazil, and how they are coming into your food. Tell us about that.
So so I'm originally from Brazil, from São Paulo. So that's where I've grown up. And I, back home, I was a teenager, and I was kind of going to university. So I was studying economics. So I was did like about a year and a half until I realized that that wasn't for me. So I was just kind of like, I felt I was wasting my time. So I wanted to make a change in my life. So I decided to come to UK to learn a bit of English and give it a go. My first month, I needed to find a job, you know, as a student, you need to find a job. So then I came to work. I went to work in the kitchen, and in the meantime, I was studying as well. So that was the beginning of everything. So I started feeling, you know, the passion, the love of food. That was something that was really enjoying, you know, that atmosphere in the kitchen, that you're learning something. And I was feeling good for myself. Despite I had my mom had a restaurant back home, and I grew up in this environment, but I never felt that, you know, I want to be part of it one day. So it was just, you know, coming over here, that was the first step. And, you know, everything started from there.
Right. Okay. So you didn't cook when you were a young boy.
Nothing at all. That's why. Yeah. I felt that I had a lot to catch up because, you know, despite some youngs, they have, you know, they discover, you know, they want to be, you know, chefs when they have, you know, 16, 17, they have opportunities to work in the age. I think it's brilliant, but it didn't happen that way with me. So I actually started quite late. So I felt I had a lot to catch up.
Yeah.
So that was a little pressure as well that you're putting yourself, right? So you just constantly, you know, you want to work in different places and learn. You know, I actually did Westminster College in here. But that was the part-time studying as well. And until I moved to Italy, then I went to Spain, so came back to UK. So there was a lot going on in between, yeah.
So you mentioned that you had studied economics. What was it that made you decide to become a chef? I mean, how did you go from economics to a chef?
Well, let's just say, how did I first went to economics, right? So it's like, you know, sometimes you're just like 18 and like a teenager, you know, it's pretty hard to make decisions for the rest of your life, right? So, you know, my dad had my grandparents had a big business, like a soft drink factory back home. And I felt at that stage, I would be able to, you know, follow their path. You know, it's kind of like forcing yourself into something, right? And then, you know, I think coming over here, like, you know, the first job I had was, you know, in the kitchen. So I think that kind of, you know, showed me that, you know, that could possibly be my career future.
Yeah.
And yeah, so.
And so, I mean, okay, so let's talk about that. You had a great start with phenomenal chefs. I mean, you work with first Stefano Biocco and Keith DaCosta, and then Heston Blumenthal, Simon Rogan. Talk to me about mentorship and who would you consider has been your greatest mentor?
Well, it's not fair picking just one person, right? But I, you know, I've chosen to work with those chefs because I felt that I had some sort of similarity on the style of the foods and had something, you know, I think it diverse yourself from the way you learn. It was a key for me. Mm. And, you know, moving to different countries on my own, there is, again, is a massive learning curve, but not also about the job you're doing. It's about the culture and it's about the language as well. It's something that I always felt that I was gaining as well. So, I think everything started pretty much when I moved to Italy and I ended up have the opportunity to work with Stefano Baiocco, which is in Villa Feltrinelli in Lake Garda. So that place, you know, I worked like over 3 years in there. That was amazing, you know, eye open, and you know, you're learning so much. And I think Stefano is the guy who, you know, inspired me throughout, you know, the growing, you know, to what I am now, let's say, or but his passion for cooking, and he's always facing the challenging where he was, you know, but you know, now he's got two Michelin stars, and I think, you know, to see that progression is yeah, amazing, let's say.
And so, and what advice would you give to young chefs of today?
Well, let's just say that, you know, let's say just, I think the generation nowadays is, it needs, you know, they have great opportunities a lot more than I would say that when I first started. We don't talk about, you know, thousands of years ago, but I, it's just things are a lot more out there for you, let's say. Probably I would say just keep it believing, you know, be super humble and keen to learn, and accept, you know, mistakes, and accept that you're going to be told off, right? Mm-hmm. And just don't get upset and run out and don't come back anymore. But, you know, those things, just embrace and learn as much as you can, and allow the time to do that. You know, don't just think that you, in certain age, that you've done for the rest of your life, you know, hey, you're going to still be learning until the day you die, let's say, you know. Yeah, so
absolutely. Tell me how it was, you know, your experience in kitchens that are such, you know, they're such high stress environments, and they're such, you know, strong male sort of dominating environments as well. There's a lot of male testosterone going around, and how do you cope with that?
I felt that, you know, at some stages of, you know, my career, but also life, you know, growing up, you know, you're kind of teenager, you're going towards this adult, let's say, life. But, you know, I think the fact that, you know, being gay, it wasn't an easy situations that I had to face, that it wasn't easy, let's say. I think, you know, working in kitchens, you pretty much predominantly, you know, men, and there's always, you know, there's a banter, there is a joke, but there's a lot of bullying as well. So, you know, I think that one thing that probably helped me to go through is, it was the fact that I'm not camp. So I, you know, I could get away with a few things, but, you know, in your head, you're kind of like, I think, like, you know, is that, you know, I never wanted to this interfere on my, you know, on my career, let's say, or, you know, being in the kitchen, you feel that you always have to constantly proving yourself. And I never wanted to this be part of it, or interfere on my career. So, but it, you know, is the bullying's are in there, the jokes are in there. So, you know, it, you know, obviously nowadays I'm married, and I'm happily. Who knows me. That's it. So there's nothing to hide. You know, you know, I have an incredible husband, and so. But like back in years, let's say, when, you know, he started in the kitchen, so you kind of don't know where to position yourself. So yeah, but it was just, you know, kind of worries, you know, that you sometimes try to pretend to be the person that you are not, but But yeah, but this is well over now. And
do you feel that you would have been, you know, bullied or been subjected to more bullying had you been more open about being gay when you were working in restaurants at that time?
Yes and no, perhaps. I never felt comfortable straight away saying, hey, I'm gay, you know, but I never felt the point of doing this anyway, you know. I think, it shouldn't affect on your work, you know,
yeah.
Whatever you are, whatever you're coming from, doesn't matter. But at some point you started thinking this, you know, so you better, you know, keep yourself for yourself, you know, in order to keep things like, you know, smooth and avoiding conflicts, let's say, you know. But yeah, maybe I wouldn't know if that would have helped or not.
Yeah.
And
so you met your husband at the Fat Duck. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So Charlie's front of house. So I, you know, in the kitchen, we met the Fat Duck 10 years ago. So we've been working together for a long time now. He's now currently work with me here in the restaurant as well, which is just amazing to have. But he's also a super talent as well, what he does. And been married for 5 years now, have a beautiful chocolate Labrador as well. So he's
and was very... Charlie was he a chef, or was he always front of house?
No, he started as a chef.
Okay.
So he did the Westminster, and he's always worked as a chef, early stage of, you know, when he was teenager, and then eventually he moved to front of house. Yeah.
So that's kind of like a match made in heaven, one would say, because, you know, working as, you know, a team in a partnership, you know, one in the kitchen and one front of house. I've spoken to a lot of couples who have the same dynamic, and it works incredibly well.
Yeah, let's say this. Yes, is for me is a you know, since he joined in here like a full time, it took a lot from my shoulders. You know, so when you run the business like this, and then you have the, you know, you want to be focused in the kitchen, but you also, you know, always concerned about the floor. So you know, having him, you know, is he only helped, and having the eyes that you trust in there.
Yeah.
And this is perfect. Let's say. Yeah.
Yeah. You've both got the best intention for the restaurant, and
and
trust each other to get the best out of each
other. The best out of him. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And do you face, as you know, as a married gay couple now, do you face any sort of discrimination?
I would like to think we don't. Luckily, there we have, we're surrounded by beautiful people, and we have a beautiful friends. We have they accept what we are, who we are. And together, and I think that's enough, right? We have a beautiful family for both sides, and which, you know, accept us and support us. So I think this is more than enough. And you know, I couldn't have asked for, you know, a better situation, let's say. So yes, sometimes you might face some sort of discrimination, but you just try not to take it, really. I don't know. I never actually experienced anything, you know, that bad, let's say. So.
And what would your advice be to someone else in your shoes, who's, you know, who's up and coming chef working in kitchens, and it's, you know, obviously very, very, you know, difficult environment already? What would you say about, you know, someone who's struggling to come out with their sexuality?
Just first of all, just be what you want to be, and just believe in yourself. And if that person or doesn't want to be, you know, with you, or doesn't want to be close to you because, you know, you are whatever you want to be, I think that is just is a minor thing that should be a worry in your life. There is plenty out there, people out there that will be loving you for what you are. So concentrate on that. Just be surrounded by good people and good energy, let's say. And just don't try to be a person that you are not, you know, let's say this. Yeah, this is the worst thing you can possibly done, let's say.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of people struggle with it, and thank you so much for sharing. I think, you know, it's really, really inspirational and awesome of you to be so honest and open. At what point did you feel the time was right to start up on your own?
I was having this feeling for a while, and then it was just a matter of having the right opportunity. And, you know, after working all this time for, you know, great chefs and living abroad as well, then I needed to, you know, I needed to express myself throughout my cooking. So the only way to do this is when you work for yourself, when you, you know, when you have the opportunity to open your restaurant, or, and that's what happened to me. So, you know, I was with Simon for a long time, and you know, I'm amazing chef, amazing person. But at that stage, I fell, and there was a, just in case of opportunity as well, came up to starting this partnership with Paolo in here at you know, the Town Hall Hotel.
Yeah, and was there, like, did you have any fear behind starting up on your own, or were you very kind of determined to succeed and do well?
The fear is always there, obviously. You don't succeed if you don't have a fear. And but you kind of gonna have to you have gonna have to try, you're gonna have to do, right? Otherwise you wouldn't know if you'd become successful or not. I think we still have a lot to go. We still have a lot to learn as well. But I just more exciting of you know, to do something, and that was, yeah, just to say this is mine, you know, and, you know, kind of this is my dish, you know, I put on a menu, I want to see people's reaction, you know, when they're eating. So that was more the kind of feeling that I had, really. And but looking back now, it is a lot stressful, you know. It's not just like a wonderland, you know.
Yeah.
So there is a lot more behind. So
and so, okay, so well, let's talk about your menu. So you've got a 5, 7, and 10 course tasting menu. Is there a signature dish that runs through all the options?
Right, so we haven't been open for long enough, let's say, to allow us to make many changes. I like it more to involve the dish. So other than just, oh, get rid of and come with another one, I'm very much into consistency. So I like to, you know, get the dish and involve and make it better, you know, and make it tastier, make, you know, as good as it can be, let's say. So there are dishes in the curly menu that we just started, let's say the scallops, but, you know, from when we started until now has changed so much. So that's what I like to see, and, you know, improving the quality, you know, that way, even the way it look as well. So there are a few elements in there that are currently on the menu. I wouldn't pick just one in particular.
So you don't give diners like an actual menu as such. It feels very exciting when, you know, you don't really know what's coming. Is that suspense part of the theater at the restaurant?
Yeah, so when we first decided to do this, I was personally for our, you know, it's going to be hard, you know, how people is going to accept this and, you know, just don't have nothing to choose. And we're going to have to be, you know, perfect all the time. You know, sometimes, you know, you go to a restaurant and you have, you know, tasty menu and you have, oh, this dish, I don't like it. This dish, you know, so, you know, being a blind taste menu. So part of me saying yes is challenging, but is also exciting, right? Yeah. So you just kind of like a trust on, you know, on the chef, or trust on you know, the experience that you're going to have it. So again, that kind of, you know, throughout the time, it is building more confidence of, you know, yes, it's nice, it's good, people are enjoying. So
how do you find that? I mean, how do you find the people? Do they like it? Do they enjoy the fact that it's a surprise? Or do you think that on the whole people prefer to see a menu?
No, I think there is, but what I've learned, if you know, through this time, it was that people actually giving a great feedback. And because what I want to bring in here is that, you know, just come sit down, you know, we don't turn tables. So, you know, you can sit down here as long as you can. Well, let's say not in the current situation where everybody needs to be out by 10. Yeah. But the idea is that, you know, it's like, you know, at home and you're just having, you know, good time, good foods and good drinks and enjoy yourself. You know, I personally, I'm all the time in here in the restaurant. So, you know, I'm every service as well. So I do like to go and talk to the guests and, you know, have that, you know, the interaction. We've got some great regulars as well, which, you know, considering what we do and where we are, you know, having regulars is amazing. That means we're doing something good, right?
Yeah.
So keeps you, you know, all the feedback just makes you believe that you're doing something, you know, right, and just kind of like a building your confidence and to be able to give even more as well, you know.
Yeah. And you know, there's something a little bit different as well about it, because, you know, not only is the food a little bit of a surprise, but also, you know, your drinks pairing menu is unusual as well. It's, you know, you don't just stick to wine. You have beer on there, you have vodka on there, which is quite interesting. I like that kind of variation.
Yeah, and to be honest, I would love to even be able to offer more a random selection, but sometimes, you know, when it comes down to pairing, and you know, there is some, it just got, you can't go too crazy because the acceptance is not much in that, you know, people still wants to have the wine. Mm. You know, and but it's nice to work with that, so you not only necessarily can match, you know, the food with wine, you can pair it with any other drinks, you know. And I'm not saying that is the way it should be, but it's just nice to, you know, to play more on that side as well. You know, it breaks down your routine or your classic, you know, the tradition, routine, let's say, you know. Yeah. And I think it's part of the experience as well, let's say.
Yeah, and also part of the experience, I mean, it's quite interesting because on your menu, you've also got the little chicken feet on the menu. What region is that from?
Right, so the chicken dish is also one of the dishes that has been since day one, but we kind of, you know, make it so, let's say we involve these dishes so much. I think when I went to Hong Kong, basically, and, you know, in China, chicken feet is one of the, you know, the things that people eat it. So it's nothing kind of new. Even my bring it back, if he wants to bring it back in memories from my granddad making, you know, a whole chicken like a stew, you know, and there was everything in there, you know, there is the, you know, from the fee, from everything. So right. It was not about the primer cuts, you know. So I think that kind of, you know, once you decide, okay, let's have a look how it's going to work. And obviously you have, it's a long process. You have a lot of bonds to debone, let's say. And so, and it, you know, it's just kind of like a little crisp, let's say. If probably if I say that is not a chicken feet, you wouldn't even, you know, recognize the eating, let's say, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd recognize the taste because I don't think I've had it before, but in terms of looks wise, I mean, it was really interesting because you had contestants from the MasterChef this year at the restaurant, and there are a lot of viewers that obviously commented about the dish. Do you like pushing the boundaries with food?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I don't try to read, you know, those kind of reviews and comments because it's nothing good in any way. People is always going to criticize, you know, regardless. Yeah. So, you know, but it was interesting because in my mind, that, you know, chicken feet, there's nothing, you know, unusual about that. I haven't created this, you know, there is, you know, cultures and people eating for many, many years.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you know, so but I, you know, on the other side, I do like to challenge a little bit. I think that's the great about food, you know, other than just sit down and have, you know, a plate in front of you and you eat it. Yeah, but everything has to be tasted, obviously, but you know, is intrigued to bring something, you know, oh, what's this? You're eating, kind of, you know, make you think, right? So yeah. I think that's definitely the interest part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, how stressful was it to have a MasterChef contestants in the restaurant? I mean, did your guests know that it was a MasterChef series that day? How did it work?
Yeah, we knew that it was. I mean, it was a totally nightmare. Let's say it was fun. It was fun. You know, the contestants, they were great. They were, you know, great people.
It must be stressful.
And it was stressful because there was, you know, at the end of the day, is a TV program, right? So you knew that was going to happen. You know, it's being organized, but obviously sometimes, no matter how organized you can be, and is always can go, you know, different ways. So yeah, that was quite early started, as I remember. There is a lot of cameras in your face, and you know, you're constantly going around and, you know, and checking and talking, but there were, yeah, it was quite a full-on day. But it was I think the end of the results, it was nice to watch. I was really pleased for everything. I don't know if you managed to see, but it was, and it was just like the whole shame of it, that was at the beginning of the first lockdown. And I guess everybody was at home watching, but nobody could book because the restaurant had just been closed.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh damn, you know.
It's a shame.
Then the website crashed because it was like so many people wants to book, but
amazing.
Nobody could. So, but it was a great, at the end of the day, it was a great final result, let's say.
Yeah. Well, there's so much skill involved in your dishes. I mean, you were at the Fat Duck for some time, as I mentioned before, and that's where you learned molecular gastronomy. So how much of what you learned there do you apply to your own cooking at the restaurant?
Obviously, very little, because at the Duck, it's all about, you know, there's a lot of technique involved. There was a lot of machinery, particular machinery that I can't afford to have in my kitchen. But I think the feedback experience, it wasn't about the molecular gastronomy or molecular food. I think that is beyond and that. The feedback for me, it was an institutional. I've learned so much, but not only about cooking. You know, you learn how to look at things either right or wrong, but also the discipline. You know, when you work with a great place like the Fat Duck, you work at the time I was in there. There was so many great talent chefs front of house. You know, everyone is in there for a reason. Everyone was working together as a team, and that was the, you know, the place is a clockwork. So you learn how to work, and you learn how to be in a clockwork. Mm-hmm. And but the discipline, there was one thing that I have always learned from the Duck, and I was gonna take this with me. This is one thing that I find the most important nowadays in the kitchen.
And so, I mean, it's not just the cooking, but it's the attention to detail in terms of, you know, the presentation is immaculate as well. Did that come from your time at the Fat Duck? And how much thought did you put into the other elements at the restaurant, like, you know, like tableware, for example?
It's perfection, right? So, you know, you aim in that direction, you aim in that way. And, you know, I'm personally like, you know, a kind of perfectionist, let's say. I'm very demanding, and, you know, I know what I like, I know what I want. So, you know, and for me, there is no barriers. It kind of, there's, you know, you're gonna that way and that's it. So you kind of, yeah. Obviously, the Duck, there was a massive influence on me now, as a, not only as a chef, but as a person. Again, is the discipline, you know, is the philosophy, you know, is, yeah, you learn with the best, so I'm sure you can gain something good out of it.
Yeah. And I mean, you talk about being a perfectionist. I mean, you also seem very calm in your character. How do you stay so, how do you stay calm in the kitchen when the stress levels are so high?
I think I'm getting older, actually. So, yeah, so at that one point is like, you know, I can flip out sometimes, I'm not gonna lie. You know, I think, the thing is, I have a great team, and they put up with me in terms of, you know, all my demandings, and they know me as well. So, but you know, it's constantly like a chasing. You know, you in there with them as well. You're showing, you want to this, you know. So, because, you know, I'm in there so all the time, so kind of, you know, the chances are for the mistakes are less. So you kind of, okay. So there is no need to, you know, get stressed. But I'm you know, I look calm, but you know, I can
burn,
you know, I can flip
that
out, you know. Yeah, yeah. Yes, I can. Yeah, there is some situations it happens that, you know, I do flip out. So I just, you know, just go get some fresh air, take your breath, you know,
yeah,
5 minutes, and come back. You know, the thing is, it is an open kitchen, so
everyone can see, you know, everything.
Yeah, yeah. I know people like it sometimes, you know, like a bit of hell's kitchen, but this is not a one. This is not me. You know, I'm, you know, you flip out because it's natural, right? You're just looking. You're just looking to gain the best out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't. You know, it's not the way that, you know, shouting, screaming, or swearing is not the way going to gain the best out of anyone.
Yeah.
So I'll keep it calm.
Well, these open kitchens, it's become so trendy to have an open kitchen and to, you know, share that energy with customers as well. How do you find it? Because obviously, you know, when you were learning, you were working like, you know, in back kitchens and not in the public eye. So tell me about the difference, and how do you and the other chefs find it?
It is hard. Sometimes it's not everyone cup of tea, to be honest. You know, there is chefs there that just stay and, you know, hidden away, you know, getting on with the mise en place, whatever. But I think it's great. You know, I think it's not only the guests can see you, but you can see the guest as well. And I think that kind of connection, you know, it has to happen.
Yeah.
You know, in order to have, you know, a great experience. Yeah. But also, you know, we just serve it all the food as well. So we come out every single course and serve and explain, you know, and have the kind of interaction with the guest. So, but it takes time, you know. It's not just like this, you know, let's open up in a restaurant and having an open kitchen that is going to be amazing. No, you know, even the chefs as well, they learn, you know. We're trying to, you know, having a briefing about it, you know, the front of house team passing the knowledge, you know, to the chef is how to serve, how to present, or, you know, because we all have our ways of doing things, right? So, but when it comes down to the dining room, we have even to learn how to walk, let's say, you know.
It's interesting you saying the other way around, because I've always thought of it, you know, yeah, we're watching the chefs, but actually, you know, once you've actually served the dish to the customer, do you go back and, like, you know, wait and see what the reaction is once they've tried it?
I mean, the best reaction is when the dish comes back and it's clean, right? So there is no food left. That's the best reaction. And I think that's the most, like, you know, makes you smile, right? Sometimes, like, you know, if something comes back and you say, yeah, what is this? Why? You know, but that's it. They just don't want to eat. That's it. You have to kind of learn as well how to respect the diners as well. So it is a kind of connection. It's not just like as a diner sitting down, oh, it's beautiful, the chef's working, it's great. No, it's about us. You know, I'm not going to say we like staring at you and watching you eating, but, you know, you can have a little, you know, wandering around what's going on, what they're eating. But also it's help us to be, you know, prepared in advance. Let's say if you're knowing that you finishing a course, that means, you know, okay, the next course, you know, let's get ready, because it's a quick, let's say, turn as well.
So you're in partnership with Paolo Arado. How involved is he in the business? Because he's based in San Sebastian.
Yeah, so Paolo and I have a you know, great relationship. So we started this adventure together where Paolo, you know, we met at the Fat Duck when I was working there. He came in for like a month stage. Then we got on together. And, you know, after many years, you know, we took different paths, but like we kept in touch as a friend, you know. And that was just when I was working for Simon, then we just kept talking. I knew he had Amelia in San Sebastian.
Yeah.
So then we felt that we want to do something together in, you know, obviously in London. I, you know, I'm quite settled in London, so I've lived abroad as well, so I wasn't planning to go anywhere else, and I didn't want to move myself to different country to do anything. There were opportunities again before this, but we're going to stick to London. So there was the opportunity to take over this beautiful space. Mm-hmm. I felt at the time that was like I couldn't believe it, because, you know, it's a such an icon place, you know, had two great restaurants and the spaces.
Nuno Mendes, the history is really special.
The history was, yeah. And I was like, okay, you know, this is happening, you know. So it took some time, because the time we took over, that was about September 2018. And then we're thinking, oh, okay, let's open by Christmas, but then was like, you know, it's crazy, you know, it's too quick. So we opened in end of January 2019. And then, you know, Paolo has Amelia, obviously, and then that's his main baby, you know. But we do, you know, that's why he's concentrating Amelia, and then I concentrate myself in here. The good thing is Paolo had his business previously, so which helped myself as well, and helped us here to get things moving a little bit quicker and faster. And so that's the way it developed. And obviously we're still in touch. We talk a lot, you know, about things, and you know, we have you know, similarities in food style and the style that we both doing. The only thing we don't talk is about football. Obviously, I'm Brazilian, he's Argentinian, so we don't talk about football.
Brilliant. Yeah, keep it civilized.
Yeah, sure.
So how much, I mean, in East London is a really interesting location. So I'm guessing it was more about the site than the location, was it? Or were you very happy with both? Because there's only, I think, two Michelin-starred restaurants in East London.
Yeah, well, this particular area in here, Mons, very close to us. And again, is another amazing place. Mm-hmm. And, but it wasn't, it was just about the site at the first. You know, we just felt that the space is exactly what we need in terms of the capacity of in terms of the food that we want to provide. It was perfect site. And I mean, I think this part of London, let's say we are not far from Shoreditch, which, you know, is a massive boom now, but yeah. Bethnal Green is still in developing.
Yeah.
So there, I believe that in a few years in time, there will be pretty much like a Shoreditch, let's say, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the location is great. You know, it's got his ups and downs. You know, sometimes unusual things happen. But I think this is part of the scene, you know, and doesn't pull me off at all. So yeah, it's just nice. I think it's actually nice, actually, you know, thinking about it. You know, you know in the glamorous area, you know, you know in Mayfair, you try to bring the people towards this part of London as well.
So it must be really nice to be part of, you know, regeneration in that area. And you're bringing Michelin fine dining to that space. And I think that's really special to be part of that, to be part of the growth. But, you know, speaking about Michelin, the awards are postponed until early next year. How important do you feel the stars are given the current situation?
Well, I felt that, you know, since we got the star, you know, it helped massively on the business side. A part of the pride of, you know, gain, and you know, it's kind of, you know, I have always worked for Michelin chefs and with the Michelin restaurants. So for me, you know, it's really kind of emotional when happened in such a short time, especially. But yeah, it's crucial in nowadays. I think you have that kind of guest that is looking for that kind of experience. That's what we're trying to offer here. You know, we know like a everyday kind of everyday dining restaurant, but you know, I think having the differences and presumably helped more, you know, the business, let's say. But yeah, so now everything got postponed until next year. So, you know, I think is being the best thing could ever happen to us and to me personally, obviously. You know, I couldn't be, you know, prouder than having this achievement and you know, so yeah, so let's just keep pushing, let's say, right?
And are you pushing for a second star? Is that your aspiration?
Well, I don't like to talk about like much of, let's say, I don't say this. I don't, you know, I just like to, for me, I'm aiming here is the diners come and enjoy the experience.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, you know, I'm not going to say I want to have the best restaurant, you know, no. You know, for me, it's about providing amazing experience. You know, what for me makes me more than anything happier having a guest coming here and, you know, leaving this place happy and satisfied. You know, that's what we're here for. Yeah. We, you know, I think there is much more that I want to do for the Terra, and I think there is much more we can do, and I think there is much more than we can achieve. Mm-hmm. We have a great team, and I think everybody is just so hungry. And you know, we had, since we opened the restaurant, there was, you know, ups and downs. You know, there was moments that we were very quiet, and it's like, oh my God, how are we gonna do? You know, and but I think, you know, especially this year as well, we started the beginning of the year, you know, super, actually January, February was amazing. Mm. And it was like, okay, good year. I was just hoping for a good year. Then everything happened back in March. And then it's, you know, it's been like up and down. Yeah. But although we've been pretty much fully booked, the restaurant is, you know, yes, we had to reduce the amount of the guests that we normally take.
Yeah.
But we feel that there is a crowd coming in. There is more people knowing about us, which is more important.
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning, we're just like, you know, oh, who is these guys in the middle of Bethnal Green? You know, what are they doing? You know, it's like, well, they don't have a menu. What the hell is going on? You know, yeah. So it's like, we're like, you know, we kept it quiet. You know, it wasn't, you know, I guess a big opening. We suffered a little bit, but we hold it strong. And I think now is more exposing and people knowing about us more and more. So
you're collaborating with amazing chefs as well, and I came for the dinner with Alex Dilling, which was fantastic. Are there other chefs that you're, you know, collaborating with or plan to when you open up?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't done many collaborations there. You know, working with Alex was amazing, and there was luckily they managed to do this before, you know, the closing the doors.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was planning to, well, I still want to do, but I'm hopefully, well, I was going to do this year, but now forget about. But I definitely by next year I want to bring Eduardo from Mons and Engo here for like three of us, one eye only kind of thing. So I think those guys are amazing. And also, yeah, you know, we got the Michelin, our first Michelin last year together, so we kind of, you know, got to know each other, and yeah, so hopefully we can pull this together by next year.
So Ralph, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Ooh. Well, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know. Possibly. Well, there's a funny thing. I don't know. Not many people knew actually this story. But like, you know, I placed some Ninja Turtles toys around the restaurant, right? So I started off with Raphael, which is me.
Okay.
But, you know, the Ninja Turtle was, when I was a teenager, my nickname was Turtle. right? So because I had you know, little chubby cheeks and like the turtles, and so I, you know, everything was a little bit coming together. So yeah, so the, you know, I think the guys knew this recently, you know, when I think the guys say, oh, why is Ninja Turtles everywhere? And then I like, okay, no, well, guys, this is one of the reasons that I started with the Ninja, you know, turtle theme, let's say.
That's pretty cute. I can't say that I saw any Ninja Turtles when I was there. I think we went straight to the back. Where, are they just in
yeah,
the front?
Yeah, there's two like each side. Even Mr. Splinter is also somewhere, right? But yeah, all the team gathering is spread around the restaurant, let's say.
Yeah. Awesome. I did not. So next time I guess, I will look out for Raph the Ninja Turtle.
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for chatting to me. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you better, Raph. And guys, if you want to follow Raphael, he's on Instagram. Raph, just remind me what your Instagram handle is, please.
So it's Rafa Kagali. So that's my surname.
Perfect. And I'm at Posh Nosh Gal.